How many died in Lyle Square?
He stiffened, didn't realize he was still holding her hand until she let it fall from the glass.
That was its name, before the Baron. They were holding a rally. That's why there were so many people there. I didn't mean to do it, August, but I had to do something. Leo wasn't there, and the rally was turning, and I just wanted to help. I'd never gone dark before. I didn't know what would happen. Leo makes it look so simple. I thought we all burn the same way. But our brother burns like a torch, and...
And Ilsa burned like a wildfire. And August?
You could burn so brightly.
That's what Leo told him.
If you let yourself.
It was night,
whispered Ilsa.
But they all left shadows.
When she met his gaze, her eyes were haunted, dark.
I don't want to burn again, August. But if the truce breaks, I'll have to. And more people will die.
She shuddered.
I don't want them to die because of me.
I know,
he whispered, drawing her away from the splintered window.
We'll find another way.
If it came to war, thought August, how many would he kill to spare her the task? How brightly could he burn? He thought of the knife, of the life lurching through him, the sickness and Leo's promise it would get better, get easier. Ilsa sank onto the bed. Allegro hopped up and nestled against her. She didn't notice.
I'll stay with you,
said August,
until you fall asleep.
She curled up on her side, and he sat down on the floor, his head back against her bed. Her fingers wove absently through his hair.
I can feel the cracks,
she whispered.
It's okay,
he whispered back. Allegro bounded down, considered him with his green eyes, then curled up in his lap. His chest loosened with relief.
Everything breaks,
murmured his sister.
Hush, Ilsa,
he said, looking up at the stars across her ceiling.
Breaks apart.
Hush.
He fell asleep like that, surrounded by Ilsa's voice and Allegro's purr, and hundreds of stars. Chapter 10 Kate spread her tools on the bed. Duct tape, the utility of which really couldn't be overestimated. Half a dozen copper-threaded zip ties and a set of iron spikes the length of her forearm. At the very least, they might slow him down. She considered the meager selection, feeling like she was going into battle with a toothpick. Then packed the tools into her backpack and headed out. She was halfway through the kitchen, shrugging on her Colton jacket, when she noticed Callum Harker sitting on the couch. She'd barely seen her father since the trials in the basement. But there he was, arms stretched along the back of the sleek leather sofa. A step toward the couch, and she realized he wasn't alone. Sloane was kneeling at his side, head bowed and stiff as a statue, or a corpse. Harker was speaking softly to the Malkai. Kate couldn't hear the words, and she hesitated, feeling like an intruder. But this was her house, too. She fetched a mug and poured herself a cup of coffee, making no effort to be quiet. Harker clearly heard. He made a short motion with his hand, and Sloane withdrew and went to stand by the window. Morning light streamed in against his blue-white skin and seemed to go straight through it.
"Good morning, Catherine,"
said her father, lifting his voice. Kate took a long sip of coffee, ignoring the way it burned her throat. "Morning." She imagined him asking her how she was settling in, imagined telling him that she didn't need Sloane keeping tabs. Maybe he would ask her about school, and she could tell him that she'd met a boy and planned to bring him home. But of course he didn't ask her any of those things, so she couldn't answer. Instead, she said, "You're up early."
"Actually,"
he said,
I've been up all night.
His arm slid from the couch as he stood.
I figured I would stay up a little longer to see you off.
Hope flickered through her, followed almost immediately by distrust. What for? She challenged, blowing on the coffee. Harker crossed the room, moving with the sure steps of someone who expected the world to get out of his way.
I'm your father,
he said as if that were an explanation.
Besides, I wanted to give you something.
He held out his hand.
Something more fitting for a Harker.
Kate looked down and saw a new pendant glittering in his palm. It looked like a large coin on the end of a thin chain, the V embossed and filled with 9 garnets, each shining like a drop of blood.
The metal is silver,
he said.
More delicate than iron, but still pure.
Kate tried to find the meaning in the gesture, the trap. Was it my mother's?
No,
said her father sternly.
It was mine. And now it's yours.
He crossed behind her and swept her hair aside to unfasten her standard medal.
And one day,
he said, sliding the silver chain around her throat,
perhaps you'll have more than my pendant.
She turned to face him, this man who'd given her his eyes, his hair, and little more, this father who'd always been a shadow at the edges of her life, more legend than real. The knight in a story, strong and stoic and always somewhere else. He was all that she had now. Was she all that he had too? Behind her father, Kate met Sloane's red eyes. I know, she said, holding the Malachi's gaze, that you don't want me here. She waited, half expecting Harker to deny it, but he didn't.
No father wants his daughter in harm's way,
he said.
I already lost your mother, Catherine. I don't want to lose you, too.
You lost my mother to fear, she wanted to say. To her own monsters, not the ones that follow you.
But,
continued Harker,
you deserve a chance. That's what you want, isn't it? To prove you belong here with me?
The Maokai's red eyes narrowed. I want a chance to show you, she said, finding her father's gaze, that I'm your daughter. Harker smiled. No teeth, just a quiet curl of his lips.
You better go,
he said,
or you'll be late for school.
The elevator was waiting. When the doors closed, Kate considered her reflection and brought her fingers to the silver pendant. I have something for you, too, she thought, clutching the medallion. She couldn't wait to see the look on her father's face when she laid a sunai at his feet. Then he would know, without a doubt, that she was a Harker.
Hey, want a lift?
The morning air was heavy and stale, and August was standing on Paris's front steps, trying to shove the Colton jacket into his bag, when he looked up and saw the black sedan idling on the curb, Kate Harker leaning against it. His fingers tightened on his violin case. He glanced back at Paris's building.
How do you know where I live?
She gave him a look that said, I'm a Harker, before opening the door. Come on, get in. In response, August actually took a step back. Not a large one. It could have been mistaken for a shuffle, a shift of weight, but he still cursed himself.
Oh,
he shrugged.
That's okay. I don't need...
Don't be ridiculous, she cut in. We're going to the same place. Why suffer the subway when there's a perfectly good car?
Because the perfectly good car comes with a perfectly dangerous girl,
he thought. But he managed not to say it out loud. He hesitated, unsure what to do. There could be cameras in the car. It could be a trap. It could be... For God's sake, Freddy! It's just a ride to school! She turned and climbed in without closing the door, an obvious invitation, or maybe a command, to follow.
Bad idea, bad idea, bad idea.
Thudded his heart as he approached the sedan. He hovered in the open door, then took a breath, ducked his head, and climbed in, closing the door behind him with a click that made fresh panic flutter in his chest.
"You're the monster,"
he thought, followed rapidly, reflexively by,
"You're not a monster."
And then, in desperation,
"Be calm, be calm, be calm,"
because his thoughts were threatening to spiral out. The car had two bench seats, one facing forward and the other back, and Kate had already claimed the rear bench, so he took the other one. Putting his back to the driver made him almost as nervous as putting his front to Kate, but before he could say anything, do anything, the car pulled into traffic. And moments later, Paris's building vanished from sight. He could feel Kate watching him, but when he went to meet her eyes, they were leveled on his shirt.
"You're not wearing your medal," she said.
August's pulse stuttered. He knew even before he looked down that she was right. There was no prickle of iron, no weight, because the medallion was still on his bedroom floor where he'd thrown it the night before. He groaned and leaned his head back on the seat.
"My dad's gonna kill me,"
he muttered. Kate shrugged.
"It's okay," she said, flashing the ghost of a smile. "But make sure you're home before dark."
He couldn't tell if she was joking. The car cut through the streets, a blur of speed, the city tunneling behind Kate's head. Her nails, usually tapping their short metallic beat, were curled into her palms.
"If she learns the truth, you'll know."
He watched her chest rise, her lips part.
"She'll tell you herself."
August braced himself, but when she spoke, all she said was,
"I want to apologize."
"For what?"
asked August, and Kate gave him one of those looks that wasn't really surprise.
"Oh,"
he said.
"You mean for assaulting me in the hall?"
Kate nodded, opened her mouth, then closed it again. He tensed. She seemed to be struggling to find the right words.
Was she trying to hold back? Could she?
He watched as she fiddled with the medallion around her own throat. It was new, polished silver and bloody red stones.
"Look," she said at last. "Growing up the way I have, I guess it makes a person..."
"Paranoid?"
Her dark eyes narrowed.
"I was going to say guarded."
"And yes, okay, a little paranoid." Her hands slipped from the coin. "There's not a whole lot of trust in my family. I don't expect you to understand."
August wanted to say that he did,
but he couldn't, because it wasn't true. For all their differences, Ilsa and Leo were like family, and so were the Flynns. He trusted them.
"The moment I met you," she said,
"I knew you were different."
August dug his fingers into his knees, silently begging her not to say more, not to confess to this.
"So am I," she added. He held his tongue, focused on his breathing.
"We don't fit in," she went on. "Not just because we're new. We see the world for what it is. No one else does."
"Or maybe they do,"
he cut in.
"But they're too afraid of you to say it."
Kate gave him a withering smile and shook her head. "I make them uncomfortable because I'm a reminder that it's not real. That it's just this," she waved her metal-tipped fingers, "veneer. They'd rather close their eyes and pretend. But our eyes..." She trailed off, her dark blue gaze weighing him down. "Our eyes are open." And then she flashed a strange private smile, and he was back in the hall again. "Whoever you are, I'm gonna figure it out." August felt dizzy. The things Kate was saying, they were the truth, they had to be, and yet it all felt like a line to reel him in. It was too clean and too messy at the same time. Was she flirting with him, or trying to tell him she knew? Did she mean what she was saying, or was she saying something else? August felt himself scrambling for purchase as the car filled up again with silence.
You're right,
he said at last, throat dry.
About us being different. But I'd rather be able to see the truth than live a lie.
Which makes you the only bearable person at that school. Her smile widened when she said it, shifting into that genuine, contagious grin. Watching her, it was like watching a flickering image. Two versions that shifted back and forth depending on how you turned your head. He waited for her confession to spill out, but it didn't. I was wondering, she said, tapping a metal nail against the pendant. About your marks. August swallowed, rubbed his wrist.
What about them?
You said they were for sobriety, but they're permanent.
Yeah, so?
She cocked her head, revealing the silvery edge of her scar. So what if you relapse? He looked at her, unblinking.
Well, that would suck.
She laughed, but her attention was still fixed on him. She wasn't going to settle for a brush off. So he swallowed, trying to find a way to tell the truth.
If I could just wipe them off at the end of the day,
he said,
they wouldn't mean anything. They wouldn't matter. And they do. I was in a dark place once, and I don't ever want to go back. I'd rather die than start over.
She stared at him, a slight furrow between her brows, and he could imagine her thinking, so this is what it looks like when he tells the truth. And he thought,
so this is what it looks like when she believes you.
Which was almost funny, seeing as he'd never lied, but it also scared him, because it was the first time he'd seen her make that face, and the others now looked empty by comparison.
Do you know? Do you know? Do you know?
He could ask her, force her to answer. But the question was damning, and the car was too small, and he didn't know what he was supposed to do if she said yes. The violin case sat on the floor between his feet, and Leo was right. If he tried, he could smell the blood on the driver's hands, but not on Kate, and she didn't have a restless shadow, and... Freddy? He blinked. She was looking at him expectantly. The car was idling in front of Colton.
Sorry, he said.
He climbed out first and held the door open for Kate. At the last moment, he offered his hand to help her from the car, and to his surprise, she actually took it. He fought back a shiver when her nails brushed his skin. Hey, Marcus. She leaned her head back into the sedan. I have a counseling session, so I might be a little late. The man in the driver's seat only nodded and drove away. Kate set off toward the front gate, glancing back when he didn't follow. You coming?
I'll catch you around,
he said, nodding at a random cluster of juniors as if they were his friends. Again, the edge of a smirk, the raise of a brow, the careful composure that he now realized went with disbelief. I'm glad we talked, Freddy, she said, her voice sliding smoothly over the name.
Me too,
he said, pulling his cell from his pocket the moment she turned away. He dialed Henry, but it was Leo who answered.
Where's Dad?
He asked.
Flynn is stitching someone up. What is it? She knows. Knows what?
Pressed Leo.
Something? Everything? I don't know, but she knows, Leo.
His brother's voice was stiff, impatient.
What changed? I don't know. But yesterday, she threw me against a locker, and today she wants to be my friend. It's off. Something's off. And the way she said my name, not my name, I mean Freddy's name, it's wrong. And I look at her and I see two people and I can't tell which is real and... Stay put, August. But stay put.
August dug his nails into his palms.
I forgot my medal.
A sigh.
Well,
he said slowly.
Try to stay away from monsters. In the meantime, Leo, you're letting your head get away from you. If Kate Harker knew what you were, she would have felt compelled to tell you. I know, but...
August closed his eyes. But she did tell him, didn't she? What was she trying to say?
I have a bad feeling. Could you just have Henry call me when he's done? I need to talk to him.
Fine, said Leo. But in the meantime, little brother, take a deep breath and try not to lose your head.
Okay, I'll...
He started, but Leo had already hung up. Kate slammed her hand into the bathroom counter. She glared at her reflection. What the hell is your problem? A girl behind her jumped.
Nothing,
she whimpered before scurrying off. Kate exhaled as the bathroom door swung shut and slumped into a crouch, resting her forehead against the cold counter. Damn it, damn it, damn it! She hadn't done it. He'd been right there in front of her, but every time she thought of crossing to his seat, of reaching for the copper ties in her pocket, she couldn't do it. She tried to picture black-eyed Leo torturing that man until his life welled up like blood, but all she saw was Freddy sitting there, folded in on himself like she was the monster. The images didn't line up. But she'd seen the photo on her phone. She knew what he was, knew the thing sitting across from her was just a trick of the light, a facade. Freddy might look innocent, but he wasn't. He was a Sunai. But he didn't know that she knew. She still had the upper hand, the element of surprise. But for how long? It was okay. She'd prepared for this, given herself another chance. Kate would just offer him a ride home. She didn't really have a meeting after school, but she'd seen his name on the practice room sheet in smooth cursive. Frederick Gallagher, 4 p.m.
What are you doing? Came a voice, the words like a whine.
Rachel, the girl who'd cornered her on the way to the gym. Kate forced her grip to loosen on the counter.
Praying, she said, straightening slowly, composing her features.
Rachel arched a brow.
For what?
Forgiveness, said Kate. For the things I'm about to do if you don't get out of my way.
Rachel had the good sense to back up and let her pass without another word. Chapter 11. By the end of the day, August was beginning to think he'd overreacted about Kate. She'd sat beside him in history, doodling monsters in the margins of her own work instead of his. They'd passed in the hall, exchanged a nod and an awkward smile, a murmured, hey there, and that was it. He'd waited on the bleachers during study hall, found himself wanting her to show, but she didn't come. At lunch, August sent Leo a text that simply said,
feeling better,
and got back a single word.
Good.
By the last class, he was glad he hadn't left. It was finally his turn in the practice studio. As soon as the bell rang, he grabbed his violin from the locker and headed straight for the room. He was breathless by the time he reached it, heart tight with the panic that it would be locked or taken, but it wasn't. The only name left at the bottom of the page was his own. He knew he should go home, talk to Henry, and he would, but Leo was probably right. He was overreacting. And the chance to play, really play, was too tempting. Besides, the longer he stayed, the less likely he was to run into Kate on the way out. A win-win, that's what he told himself. And he believed it. August swiped his ID, and the door gave a small beep of approval before letting him in. The studio itself was a cube so white it swallowed the corners and made him feel like he was standing in a void. The emptiness interrupted only by a black stool, a music stand, a bench. When the door closed behind him, it sealed, and he felt as much as heard the soundproofing kick in. A subtle vibration followed by sudden, absolute quiet. Of course, it was never quiet in his head. Within a heartbeat or two, the gunshot started up. Distant but relentless, and August couldn't wait to drown them out. He laid the case on the piano bench and took out his phone, setting the timer for 45 minutes. He'd still have plenty of time to get home before dark. The violin case clicked open at his touch, the sound short, staccato in the silence.
He drew the instrument and bow free, then lowered himself onto the stool. With a deep breath, August brought the violin beneath his chin, the bow to the strings, and hesitated. He'd never done this before. There were so many days when he ached to pick up the violin and just play. But he never could. Music wasn't idle in the hands of a Sunai. It was a weapon, paralyzing everyone it touched. He would have loved a place like this at the compound, but resources were always stretched. Every inch of space was given over to the FTF. Housing, training, supplies. And Leo said he didn't need practice. If he wanted more chances to play, all he had to do was hunt more often. Once or twice, August had fantasized about stealing a car, driving past the red and the yellow and the green, out into the waste, with its empty stretches of field, its open space. He'd park on the side of the road and start walking out, go until he was sure no one could hear his song. But that fantasy came with its own dangers. No people meant no souls. And he'd calculated how long it would take to get that far out and back, and knew it was too risky.
"Pack a meal,"
Leo had said dismissively. August had wanted to say several things back, none of them kind. But now it was just him and the white walls and the violin. And August closed his eyes and began to play. Kate lingered after school, watching the campus empty. The students left in a wave, heading for the subway or peeling out of the lot as if they were racing against the darkness, which she supposed they were. Curfew was technically sundown, 7:23 today, according to a helpful chart outside the main office. But nobody ever cut it that close, not even the teachers. As long as they had a medallion, they would be safe. That was the idea, but no one seemed eager to test the theory. And 20 minutes after the 4 p.m. bell, the only people still on campus were a handful of sophomores retaking a quiz. A pair of seniors loitering in the parking lot and the monster in the music room. Kate perched on a bench inside the gate, waiting for the black sedan to show. The copper-line zip ties jabbed at her through her back pocket, a nagging reminder of what she needed to do. She glanced back at the school. The car needed to get here before Freddy. 30 minutes after the bell, there was still no sign of either. Kate wrapped her nails on the bench. She told Marcus she'd be late, and she tried to still the nervous prickle in her chest. But 15 minutes later, with Colton going quiet around her and no sedan in sight, she broke down and phoned the driver. He didn't answer. Fear flashed through her, sudden and sharp. It was almost 5. The light was already starting to weaken. Kate got to her feet, began to pace. She thought of calling her father, but couldn't bring herself to do it. She wasn't a child. But Freddy was still inside, and without the car, she had no way of getting him to go with her anyway. Abandoning the mission, she shifted the backpack on her shoulder and headed for the subway entrance across from campus. But when she got there, it was locked. Kate's pulse quickened as she wrapped her fingers around the metal bars. This wasn't right. The subway lines were supposed to run until sundown, but the gate had already been pulled across the entrance and padlocked shut. Her bad ears started ringing, the way it did when her heart was going too fast. She closed her eyes for a moment, tried to slow it down, but it was telling her, over and over, to run. No. Kate closed her eyes, took a breath. Think. Think. She let go of the bars and turned back toward the school, dragging her phone from her pocket and phoning a cab. The guy didn't want a dispatch, and she didn't blame him, but it was after 5 and the sun was getting lower, and she had no intention of being trapped alone on campus with a monster after dark. "My name is Kate Harker," she snapped. "Name your price. Just get here fast." She hung up and dug the iron spikes out of her backpack. The sound of metal on metal a reminder of how quiet Colton had become. She shoved one spike into her sock and gripped the other near the blunted top, knife-like point away. She headed for the front doors, but they were locked. Tried to swipe in, but nothing happened. She rattled the handles just to make sure, and then through the glass, she saw the body. He was lying twisted on the floor, his head craned back so she could see his face. It was Mr. Brody, the history teacher, his neck broken and his eyes burned black. For the first time in ages, August finished his song, and then he played it again and again. The melody, this strange, incredible thing that had come to him that first day in the alley and never left, never let go, sang in his head beneath the gunfire, always waiting to be set free, poured from him now through skin and bow and string. It thrummed through muscle and bone, wove through heart and vein, and made him feel human and whole and filled with life. Maybe it wasn't the soul he fed on. Maybe it was this. Each chord hung in the air, shimmering like dust caught in beams of sun, and as the song ended a third time and the melody trailed off, he stood there, savoring the perfect moment. The timer chirped, a shrill sound that shattered the last lingering notes and dragged August back to the world and all the troubles waiting in it. He sighed and took up the phone, silencing the alarm, then frowned. He'd sent Henry a text to say he'd be home a little late, but there was no reply. Not even from Leo. That's when he noticed there was no signal either. Damn. He reluctantly returned the violin to its case, slung his bag onto his shoulder, and went for the door. It didn't open. August tried to put his weight behind it, but the door wasn't just stiff or stuck. It was locked. He looked around, wondering if there was some kind of card swipe in the studio, but there was nothing. The access pad was on the other side. Panic chewed through him, but he swallowed and pressed his face to the glass insert, straining to see something, anything. And what he saw was the access pad busted open, spilling cut wires like innards down the wall. He was trapped. Kate staggered back from the main doors, the corpse's black eyes staring blankly out at her. She fought back a shudder, tried to think. Three Sunai. Logic said it was Freddy, but if it was Freddy, how had he gotten out and locked the subway gate without her seeing him? And if it wasn't Freddy, and the second Sunai never left the compound, then that meant Leo. Multiple Sunai on the grounds, circling like sharks. Her chest tightened, but she couldn't panic. Panic served no purpose. It clouded your head, led to fatal mistakes. She was a harker, she thought, clutching the iron spike. She would find another way out. She set off, fighting the urge to run as she rounded the corner of the school, heading for the back gate, digging out her cell with her free hand, and something hit her. Hard. The phone went skittering away as she stumbled, a steel grip vicing around her shoulders from behind. She didn't hesitate, but drove the iron spike back and down into the creature's thigh. It let out a wet hiss, its arms loosening enough for her to drop to one knee and fling it over her shoulder. The body hit the ground, rolled up, and spun with a strange grace, the spike still buried in its leg. Kate froze. It wasn't a Sunai. It was a Malkai. A skeletal shape, red eyes swiveling in a skull that looked black beneath his slick, dead skin. Half the Malkai's face was a mass of angry lines. The H on his sunken cheek had been clawed off, just like the one on the monster she'd killed in the basement. His lips dragged into a crooked grin, his voice a wet rattle.
"Hello, little Harker."
She opened her mouth to say that her father would have his head, but never got the chance. A second shape hurtled forward, too fast to dodge, a blur that caught her in the chest and slammed her back into the brick side of the school. Something inside her cracked, and a scream tore free before the second Malkai's grip tightened around her throat, cutting off the air. The monster's mouth split into a smile full of sharp teeth.
"This is going to be fun."
No service. Of course there was no service. August shoved the cell back in his pocket, took a deep breath, and then threw his shoulder against the door. He was rewarded with nothing but an echo of pain. Just because he didn't bleed and break like a human didn't mean he could outmuscle reinforced steel. He wasn't a battering ram. He looked down at his hands and thought of Leo the night before, the way the darkness had licked up his fingers, the doorknob crumbling in his grip. But August didn't have that kind of control. It was all or nothing. He rubbed his hand over the tallies on his wrist. 421 days. But it wasn't the marks he was afraid of losing. There had to be another way. He retreated into the center of the room, scanned the walls, the floor, the ceiling. Smooth, smooth, tiled. Standing on the stool, he was just tall enough to reach the insulated squares overhead. They were heavy, but when he pressed against one hard enough, it lifted, and he was able to slide it up and over. August sniffed, recoiling faintly at the stale air, then retrieved his violin and hoisted himself up into the grimy dark. The fingers were icy steel around Kate's throat, and before she could twist free, she was being thrown down against the sidewalk. She hit hard, the wind knocked out of her lungs, and her palms burning where they scraped against concrete. She scrambled to her hands and knees, but the Maokai were too fast, and one of them was on her, forcing her down onto her back. Her shoulder flared with white-hot pain as the monster pinned her to the sidewalk.
"Feisty thing,"
he murmured as the other Maokai freed the spike from his leg with a wet sound and tossed it aside. The monster on top of her had those same deep scratches running down his cheek, ruining the H and cutting all the way to bone. The marks looked fresh.
"She killed Olivier," said the other,
shaking the burn of iron from his bony fingers.
"Indeed, she did,"
whispered the first, bringing his lips to her cheek. She wrenched her head away and felt cold breath on her face as he whispered something in her bad ear, too low for her to hear. She drove her knee into his groin, but the monster only chuckled. So much for Sing. They were strong, but it was still light out, and if she could just get to her feet, put her back to the wall.
"I can hear your blood pulsing,"
said the Maokai on top of her as her fingers scrambled for the second spike shoved in her sock.
"I bet you taste sweet."
The monster's mouth yawned wide, flashing jagged silvery fangs.
"No teeth,"
warned the second, and the Maokai pinning her frowned but closed his mouth with a click. The other one produced a small handheld torch, snapped it to life. The flame hissed, and Kate thrashed beneath the monster's grip until his nails dug into her skin, drawing blood.
"I'm going to kill you,"
she snarled.
"Humans, humans, full of lies,"
sang the one on top of her, red eyes dancing with delight.
"Should we kill her first, like the others?"
The Maokai with the torch seemed to consider.
"No, there's no one to hear. We should take our time, like he would."
This was wrong. This was wrong, wrong, wrong. Her hand clawed at the grass, trying to reach the second spike. The monster on top of her smiled, and the one with the torch turned the dial, focusing the heat into a white-hot knife.
"She has her father's eyes," he said.
And Kate shuddered, remembering the teacher on the ground, his sockets scorched black.
"Hold her still."
August dropped out of a ventilation duct and into the hallway, his uniform smudged with dust and cobwebs. His shoes hit the polished Colton floor, and as he straightened, his relief at being free quickly reverted to fear. This hadn't been some random prank. Someone had wanted to keep him in that room. But who? And why? Right now, that didn't matter as much as getting out. He headed for the nearest exit, pulling the phone from his pocket, but staggered to a stop when he saw the girl's body. She was young, a freshman. Her head twisted at an awkward angle, but it was her face that made him gasp. She had no eyes. They'd been burned out. He dialed Henry as he hit the emergency door override and burst out of the building.
"Come on,"
he muttered as the phone began to ring. He let it ring 3 times, 4, then hung up and was about to dial Leo when he heard the strangled scream. It wasn't a high-pitched cry, more a muffled shout. August rounded the corner and slammed to a stop. 2 creatures huddled over a girl, their lines too long and lean, their skin too pale and bones too dark. He'd never seen a Maokai before, not face to face. They cast no shadows, but the air around their bodies shivered in his vision, their teeth jagged silver points. They looked monstrous. And the girl beneath them, the one who'd cried out, was Kate. For an instant, the world went still and time slowed, the way it did between chords, the moment drawn out like a note. He had to help her. He shouldn't help her. If he did, she would know what he was. If he didn't, she would die. They were killing her. They were framing him. She was an innocent. She was a Harker. And then, too fast, the moment collapsed, and he dropped to his knees and opened the violin case. The torch burned the air above Kate's face. The Maokai's nails were digging into her jaw, and a sound like a whimper escaped her throat. The noise, so foreign, so pitiful, was enough to shock her back to her senses. Her fingers brushed the edge of the spike, and then she heard it. Music. A single note that rang out across the grounds and filled the air. A note that seemed to take up more space than it should. And then another and another, weaving together into a song. The music was strange and haunting and beautiful. And it took all of Kate's focus to cover her good ear. But somehow, she could still hear it, crystal clear. The Maokai dropped the torch and staggered as if hit. And the one on top of her froze and clutched his skull in pain as something began to blossom like a bruise across his skin. Her fingers finally found the spike in her boot, and she drove the iron up into the Maokai's chest, past the blackish substance breaking out on his skin like sweat, and under the bone plate and into his heart. The monster screamed, clawing at himself, but it was too late. The spike was buried all the way to the blunted grip. Her fingers slick as black blood spilled from his lips and he slumped onto her. Kate shoved him off and staggered to her feet, swaying from pain, her thoughts clouded by the threads of music. And then, abruptly, it faltered, and she heard Freddy scream, "Watch out!" She turned too slowly and found herself face to face with a second Maokai. The monster caught her wrist despite the oily darkness oozing from its skin, and before she could tear free, his knife-like fangs sank into her shoulder. Pain shot through her. And then, an instant later, the monster's fangs were gone, and he was being hauled backward. Freddy's arms were wrapped around the Maokai's shoulders, one of his hands pressed flat against the pale skin at the monster's throat. And Kate stood there, dazed, thinking about how young he looked, how small, before she remembered that he was a monster too. Freddy's eyes were shut, his teeth clenched as he pinned the Maokai back against him, the darkness soaking from the monster's skin into his own like a stain. Kate's senses finally snapped back, and she broke into motion, taking up the discarded spike and driving it up into the Maokai's heart. He didn't fight. He was already slumping against Freddy's chest, the red light flickering out of his eyes by the time the iron struck home. Freddy let go, and the monster collapsed between them, little more than teeth and bones. And for a second, they just stared at each other, covered in blood and gore and gasping for air. Neither moved. Freddy's gaze rolled unsteadily over her and the corpses before drifting to his violin, discarded in the grass. Kate's fingers tightened on the spike in her hand. "Run," said a voice in Kate's head. She didn't. Freddy's eyes found hers, and he swayed a little on his feet. "What the?" Kate started, but then he doubled over and began to retch. What came up was black, glistening like oil. He tried to straighten, but stumbled forward, collapsing to his hands and knees and heaving inky liquid onto the pale concrete of the Colton sidewalk. "Get back,"
said the voice, but she was already sinking to her knees in front of him.
What's wrong?
He opened his mouth, as if trying to speak, but choked as more darkness heaved out onto the concrete. When he looked up, his eyes were no longer gray, but black. Black and full of pain. Veins stood out on his hands and wound like black cords over his skin, climbing his throat. What had Sloane said?
We cannot feed on them. They cannot feed on us.
Then why? Why had he done that? She wanted to ask him, but Freddy's eyes were sliding out of focus, his body shaking. He reached weakly for his violin, but it was too far away, and moments later he crumpled to the pavement. He wasn't moving. Was he dead? Did she want him to be dead? A small part of her thought, so that's how to kill a Sunai. But no. His chest was still lurching up and down with shallow, staccato breaths. Her cell phone rang. It was still sitting on the sidewalk where it had been knocked from her hands, and she rushed forward and answered. Hello? She asked, breathlessly. But it wasn't her father, or Marcus. It was the cab company. The car was waiting in front of the school. The meter was running. Kate looked around at the wreckage of the fight. The two Maokai corpses, the torch scorching a black line into the sidewalk, the unconscious Sunai at her feet. She was covered in drying blood and streaks of blackish gore. She swallowed. Stay there, she told the cab. I'm on my way. Verse 3. Run, monster, run. Chapter 1. When August woke up, everything hurt. Pain had always been a fleeting thing, something that skinned along the surface of his senses. But this was deep, knotting around every muscle and bone. The last time he'd gone dark, it had hurt to the core, burned through him like a fever. But even that was different. Now he felt hollowed out. It hurt to breathe. It hurt to be. And for the first time in his life, he wanted to crawl back into the darkness of his dreams. Instead, August dragged his mind to the surface where his body waited and opened his eyes. He was sitting on a concrete floor, propped up against an unfinished wall, a tangle of metal girding and wooden beams against his back. His vision swam, then focused, then swam again. He tried to move, but his wrists were bound to the metal framework on either side with zip ties. Kate Harker was sitting in the middle of the concrete floor, arms around her knees, watching him. She was wearing his Colton blazer over her blood-streaked polo. A bruise was coming out along her jaw, and she held one arm in front of her at a protective angle, her polo torn where the Maokai's teeth had sunk in. She looked shaken. But when she saw him staring, she stiffened, her face unreadable. "Welcome to my new office," she said. Her voice was cold, distant. Maybe it was shock. He'd seen FTFs go through that, after a brush with death. "I was starting to wonder if you'd ever wake up." August tore his eyes away and looked around the room. They weren't alone. A man was slumped in the corner, unconscious, hands bound and mouth covered in duct tape. A label on his shirt read, V-City Cab. She followed his gaze. "You're heavier than you look," she explained. "I needed his help getting you up here. And then, well, I didn't think I should let him go. But I paid him pretty well before, well..." August tried to swallow. His throat felt like it was coated in sand. "My violin." Kate wrapped her nails on the case beside her. He sagged with relief, and she gave him a look he couldn't parse. Her attention drifted to the windows, empty frames covered in plastic sheeting. Even through the plastic, he could tell it was getting dark. He should have been home by now. Where was his phone? He couldn't feel it in his pocket. Had he dropped it?
"Where are we?"
he asked.
"My father has safe houses set up around the city."
A wave of panic hit him like nausea.
And you took us to one? After his
Kate shot him a withering look. They weren't my father's anymore, she said icily. But I'm not stupid. We're in a renovation project around the corner from the safe house. I have a lot of questions, Freddy. He swallowed again.
August,
he said tiredly.
My name's August.
August, she said, as if testing it out. That does suit you better. August Flynn. So she did know.
How long?
He asked, and she must have understood the question because she said, Yesterday. August nodded. He'd been right. He'd probably feel vindicated if he weren't in so much pain. I thought your kind were supposed to be invincible. She said kind like it was a dirty word. He cringed.
Nothing is invincible.
A dry smile flickered across her face. That's what I thought.
Kate,
no, she cut in. You don't get to talk yet. He fell silent. The blood pounded in his head. Kate scraped black gore from her metallic nails. Why did you help me? The question came out fast and sharp, like this was the one she'd been waiting to ask. He closed his eyes.
It was a trap. Those Maokai weren't just trying to kill you. They were trying to make it look like a Sunai execution. They would have pinned the death on me, on my family, and used it to break the truce.
He dragged his eyes open again. The illness was finally, mercifully receding.
I meant what I said in the woods, about wanting peace.
I'm supposed to believe the monster's a pacifist?
I never lied to you.
But you didn't tell the truth.
How could I?
He asked.
Would you?
Kate didn't answer. She was staring at the floor, her face taut with pain.
Are you all right?
He asked softly. Her head snapped up. Are you fucking with me? August shrank back, confused.
I was just asked.
Stop talking. She got to her feet, revealing the iron spike she tucked beneath her knee. I know what your kind can do. I've seen the footage, seen the way you toy with your victims, playing some sick game of cat and mouse.
Footage?
Thought August. I am not a mouse, August Flynn. Do you understand? I know what you are. She was coming toward him. The metal girding she'd bound him to ran vertically up the wall, and he dragged himself to his feet, wrists sliding up the bars until he was at full height.
I saved your life, he said.
In response, Kate brought the tip of the iron spike to his throat. It was still stained with Maokai blood, and the scent turned August's stomach. Kate's eyes were feverish, but her hand was steady.
A thank you would suffice, he said.
Why were you at Colton? She demanded.
My father sent me.
You mean Flynn?
Yes.
Did he want you to kill me?
No. He wanted me close to you in case the truce broke. There aren't many things in this world Callum Harker cares about, and Leo thought you might prove valuable as leverage in the fight.
August leaned forward against the metal tip.
And for the record, it's going to take more than this to hurt me.
As if rising to the challenge, Kate pressed down. But the point didn't break the skin. Just then, a cell phone buzzed on the concrete floor beside the violin case. Kate turned toward it, and horror washed over August.
You left it on?
I took out the GPS, she said, crouching to retrieve the cell. She frowned at the screen.
Kate,
he said, tugging against the zip ties. He swore. They were threaded with metal.
Who is it?
She straightened.
Home. Don't answer,
he said, wishing for the first time he could change a person's mind instead of just loosening their thoughts. Her thumb hovered over the screen.
Kate, someone sent those Maokai to kill you.
Kate stared down at the cell. It stopped buzzing, and then started again. They broke their oaths, she said. Just like Olivier.
Who's Olivier?
They're hungry and restless, she went on, voice half lost beneath the phone's ringing. And sick of following orders.
August twisted against the ties. That wasn't some random attack back there. It was calculated. Someone went to a lot of trouble to make sure you died, and I was there to take the fall.
Kate hissed a single word under her breath. The phone was still going, but instead of answering, she turned it over and slid the battery out. The buzzing died. She said the word again, and August realized it was a name. Sloane. He'd heard that name before.
Leo spoke of him the way he spoke of most monsters, only worse. My father keeps a Malkai as a pet.
Would this Sloane start a war?
Kate shot him a look. Death and violence. Isn't that what all monsters want? August didn't rise to the bait.
Look, I don't know, she said, pacing. But I'm pretty sure he wants me gone. And if he could frame Flynn in the process, I don't know anyone else who'd think that many steps ahead.
Most of the Malkai are single-minded killers. Sloane's different.
Do they listen to him, the other Malkai?
I've been home for 9 days, August. I haven't really noticed. So far, his favorite hobby seems to be tormenting me.
If he's involved, then you can't go home. You...
He trailed off as he heard the sound of cars coming to a stop. An engine cutting off. The sounds were low, muted, and Kate hadn't heard them yet. She was still pacing.
Kate.
Car doors opened and closed.
Kate.
Footsteps.
Kate.
She turned toward him.
What? You have to untie me, he said, trying to get his hands free.
The zip ties were too tight, and even though the metal didn't hurt, it made the bonds hard to break.
Why would I do that?
Because someone's coming. A door slid open somewhere below, the sound loud enough, finally, for her to hear.
They must have tracked you here.
No, she said, shaking her head. I took the GPS out of the phone. In the corner, the cab driver stirred. A cell jutted out of his pocket.
Shit!
Footsteps echoed on stairs. Kate hurried to the window, shouldering her backpack. She drew a lighter from her pocket, a small silver knife snicking open from one end, and sliced through the plastic sheeting with the small but vicious blade, revealing a bruised sky beyond. For a second, he thought she was going to leave him there, pinned to the wall for Harker's men to find. But then she came back.
I was going to turn you into my father, she said.
When you got in the car this morning, she slid the knife between the zip tie and his skin. It would have been so easy.
So why didn't you?
She looked up, swallowed. You didn't look like a monster. August held her gaze. He wanted to say, I'm not, but the words got stuck.
And now?
Kate only shook her head and gave the knife a swift pull, but the zip tie didn't break. She frowned and tried again. Nothing. August paled.
Please tell me you have a way of getting these off.
I didn't plan on getting them off, she snapped. August began to fidget with panic, but Kate simply raised her shoe and slammed it into one of the metal bars. The noise was loud, too loud, but the bar buckled and gave, and August managed to weave his zip-tied wrists free. Kate kicked the second bar, but it was stronger, or the angle was wrong. It bent, but didn't break. The footsteps were getting louder. August wrapped his hands around the bar, and so did Kate, and together they pulled with all their weight until it finally came free. And the two went crashing to the concrete floor. Kate landed on her injured side and gasped in pain. But when August went to help her up, she pulled back as if his touch were poison, and managed on her own. August caught up the violin case as she was reaching the torn plastic on the window, and he climbed through after her, expecting a fire escape of some sort and finding only a 6-inch lip before a 3-story fall. The air caught in his throat.
Don't tell me you're afraid of heights, she said, shimmying along the edge. Not heights, he murmured. Just falling.
He looked around, trying to figure out how they were supposed to get down. when Kate took a breath and jumped. Chapter 2.